Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Now, it's early in the morning, but thank you. Today's session focuses on some of the improvements in Active Directory, especially ADFS. I'll talk to you shortly about some of the improvements we've done in Azure AD as well. And the theme here is essentially how do we make it easier to bring in or enable employees to bring in their own devices while still managing corporate risk and ensuring that data is secure. My name is Mahesh, and I'm a PM on the AD team. I work on ADFS and also help out a little bit with Azure AD. So as we actually started on this journey, a lot of our direction was influenced by feedback we got from customers. We got input that users expect to work from anywhere and increasingly on devices of their own choice. So the old world where you essentially had domain joined machines with group policy and security settings enforced on the device has kind of changed, where you now have a mix of devices that employees are bringing into the mix, into the workplace, and they expect to be able to work from anywhere, both inside the corporate network as well as outside, on devices of their own choice. On the other end of the spectrum, the number of applications being used, business-sensitive applications, has increased. There's all sorts of applications. There are SaaS applications, line of business applications, and others that are actually developed by third-party ISVs. And what we realized is across all of these applications, there's a whole bunch of corporate assets or resources that are exposed, and administrators essentially found out that it was really getting harder to manage risk. How do you ensure that across a wide spectrum of devices that your data is essentially secure, and that you can manage who has access to what, and ensure that someone on a device that's compromised or that you don't trust essentially does not have access to your resources? The other end of the spectrum, developers essentially have the same conundrum. How do I write secure applications that leverage all of these benefits in Active Directory, including single sign-on and the ability to work from anywhere, and sort of do it in a seamless manner where I don't really have to change my app a whole lot? So these are really the guiding principles that essentially helped us as we embarked on some of this work in the past year and a half. Essentially, what it boiled down to was that IT admins were telling us that they needed better risk management tools. On the user front, they wanted the ability to essentially require stronger authentication for end users, and that too based on business needs. So not all applications are the same. In some cases, you have sensitive applications where you want to be able to step up authentication, or you want stronger authentication when users access those applications. Examples would be payroll apps or any other corporate HBI kind of applications. On the other end of the spectrum, we also want to be able to enable users to access company resources from anywhere. Essentially, the type of applications could be SaaS, on-premises applications, custom applications that the company has developed, ISV-based applications, or just line-of-business applications that are used. And the third pivot essentially is, how do I protect against risk associated with unknown or non-compliant devices? If someone's jailbroken the device, if they don't have PIN or passcode protection on the device, how do I try to make sure that my data stays protected on those devices? So in order to tackle some of these asks, we essentially, as we thought about this a little more, this notion of conditional access control really came to mind. And the notion here is that you have a bunch of pivots or attributes based on which you can decide whether to grant access to an application, and what kind of authentication and what kind of strength you require from the user's auth perspective, as well as the kind of device they need to be using in order to access that resource. So the way we think about this is that you have a bunch of attributes. The first one is user attributes. Who is the user? What group do they belong to? Whether they're still a valid employee of the organization. You want to make sure that when someone leaves the organization, they cease to have access to resources. You also want to make sure that when they're accessing sensitive resources, you understand their authentication strength, whether they've performed MFA or not, before allowing them to get access to resources. On the devices front, essentially, you want to make sure that devices are known to the organization, they are managed, that some basic level of policy compliance is there, be it a PIN or a passcode or something like that, and that the device has not been marked lost or stolen. So if somebody reports a device lost or stolen, you want to be able to seize access to data from that from that device. The third pivot is an application, obviously, which is typically the sensitivity of that application. How important is it to your business? And then really the policies you configure for that application would depend on the sensitivity of that app itself. The need to enable anywhere access. Certain applications you're okay with only allowing access from the internet, but certain others, in order to enable productivity, you sort of want to be able to let users access from anywhere, from outside the corporate network as well. Again, the authentication freshness and strength. For a really sensitive app, you want to be able to make sure that users have authenticated in the recent past and not like a long time ago. So you want to be able to force fresh authentication every so often for a sensitive app. The fourth one was essentially network awareness. At every point in time, the system needs to be aware of where that access request is coming from so that you can essentially figure out what are the right set of policies to apply to that request before being allowed access to the resource. The way we think about this is that the capabilities we're building in Active Directory, both on-premises with ADFS, as well as in the cloud with Azure AD, are designed to offer the ability to create these rules based on conditions, combinations of conditions, and then Azure AD would evaluate that on a per resource basis before letting access through to the resource. And you'll see some of the steps we've taken in ADFS in that direction. You'll also see some of the steps we're taking in Azure AD, and over time you'll see how some of that story plays out. A few examples of the kind of policies you'd expect to be able to set is this one here. Allow users only on known devices to access my payroll application, but always require them to authenticate freshly, so I know for sure that it's the user at that device and they're authenticating themselves. The second one is allow users to access our SharePoint portal from the extranet only if they have performed MFA, right? Now, these are just rules or policies in plain text, and you will be able to actually convert these into policies on the application inside of ADFS, and eventually over time in Azure AD as well. The third one is allow users from our finance department to access our payroll application, require them to perform MFA and use known devices for extranet access. So you'll see that this is a fairly complex policy which says that you want to scope access to that application to a set of users or a group of users, and when they access from the extranet, you want to be able to make sure that they've performed MFA and they're also coming from a known device, not from any random device. So these are the kind of policies that we want to be able to enable admins to create so that you can essentially configure access to your resources in a very secure manner. From an end user's perspective, when they're denied access, essentially they should be able to get a friendly access denied message, which the admin can customize, and that sort of tells them why you've been denied access. In this example, you'll see that the user was denied access because the resource required a workplace joint device or a known device, and the user's device was not a known device. So here you have the ability to tell them why they were denied access on a per application basis, and you can also point them to some remediation steps which tells them how they can go about fixing that situation, how they can go and workplace join their device and get access to that resource. This is one of the capabilities we've built into ADFS in 2012 R2, where on a per app basis, you can actually configure a custom access denied message and really make it tailor-made for that application. Offer a good remediation experience, essentially. In a nutshell, these are the kind of conditional access control capabilities we built into Windows Server 2012 R2 AD, where users can essentially access corporate data regardless of the device or location, and that is possible because of this component called the Web Application Proxy, which ships new in Windows Server 2012 R2. What we did with the Web App Proxy is we essentially have a reverse HTTP proxy and an ADFS proxy joined together as part of a single role service. And what it does is it enables users to be pre-authenticated securely at the edge before they're allowed to access your sensitive resources, your SharePoint portal, and so on. It has a whole bunch of other benefits which we'll sort of allude to through the rest of the deck. But primarily think of it as a way to pre-authenticate your users at the edge in a manner that's consistent with the rules that you've configured on your ADFS server. So the same set of rules are applied regardless of whether the user comes from the intranet versus extranet, but you get the ability to pre-authenticate at the edge. On the ADFS side, what we did was enable the creation of these conditional access policies where you can create policies based on many pivots. The user, their group memberships, the kind of network location they're trying to access from, the device they're trying to access from, what is the authentication strength, and a whole bunch of these pivots. And you can create combinations based on and or or kind of conditions, create claim rules, and that determines whether the user has access to that resource or not. And we really did this based on claims in Kerberos-based web apps, RESTful OAuth applications, ADFS now supports OAuth, and also for forms-based access Now, the obvious question is, what about Azure AD? What's the equivalent? What's the story there? So the current situation is that we're basically building similar capabilities out in the cloud as well. And if you look closely at what we've announced or the kind of features that have been in private preview the past couple of months, you'll notice that many of these building blocks are put in place. They're kind of in production or in private preview, and we're kind of getting there. A few examples here are, if you want to actually manage user authentication, you now have Windows Azure MFA, which runs as a service in the cloud, and you can subscribe to that. You can ensure that you require MFA for specific users or groups in your tenant. You can require MFA for a specific app. This is in private preview. It's coming soon. You also have the ability to create an IP whitelist, which says, outside of this IP whitelist, require users to perform MFA. You have capabilities to remember my device for an end user and then suppress MFA for a small period of time. So all of these MFA-related capabilities are now in private preview. In order to manage application access, especially because you have SaaS applications, you have line of business applications, you have a whole bunch of applications, we invested in something called an app gallery and a management portal, which is really this way to get all of your applications together and gives you a dashboard view of all the apps that your company uses that have been actually provisioned to users. So end users get what's called an app access panel, and then based on what kind of apps their admin has actually enabled for them or offered for them, they get a view of what kind of apps are available to them. The third component is manage device risk. So in order to be able to actually register your devices with the workplace, we've delivered something called the device registration service. And many of you are probably aware that we actually have that in ADFS on server 2012 R2. What this slide sort of telling you is that we're building the same in the cloud, and we have that in private preview. So if you don't really want to manage that infrastructure on-prem, you have the ability to run that in the cloud with Azure DRS or Azure Device Registration Service. And then more features are coming soon, so we'll basically try to build parity and make sure the same capabilities for conditional access control are available in the cloud as well. With that, I wanted to focus on ADFS. The rest of the session will now go deeper into ADFS. I'll walk you through some of the new features in ADFS. We'll take a few samples on how the ADFS authentication and authorization pipeline works, how you can trigger MFA, how you can control access, and all of those capabilities. But to start off with, here's a quick look at what's new in ADFS on Server 2012 R2. On the devices front, we have something called AD Workplace Join, which allows end users to join their devices to the workplace in more or less a self-service manner. Once they join their device to the workplace, that device gets an identity. And so now ADFS is able to authenticate that device in addition to the user. And so you now get stronger authentication, where you get primary authentication of the user. You also get seamless authentication of the device itself. The supported platforms are iOS 6. We've worked with Samsung in order to work on Android, make sure that Workplace Join is integrated into Android as well, Windows 8.1 Plus. And then for Windows 7 domain join machines, we have an auto Workplace Join tool that you can essentially push down through group policy and make sure that those machines are also domain joined. The next capability was essentially protection from lost or stolen devices. We'll talk about this a little more in the session, but essentially the ability to revoke access or revoke SSO, revoke tokens issued to a device that has been marked lost or stolen, that an end user has reported lost or stolen. On the user authentication front, we essentially now have support for alternate login IDs. An example of that would be the ability to log in with your email address. So if you have a local domain that's not routable, you can essentially use your email address in order to be able to authenticate. And that unblocks a lot of organizations from using Office 365. We now have built-in support for MFA. Essentially, with ADFS 2.x, you had this problem where MFA was not really built into the system, and it was really a hack to add it on. And so there wasn't this really strong binding between your primary authentication and your additional authentication. And that's kind of resolved now with MFA being an integral part of the system itself. We actually took it one step further. We made it extensible so third parties can write their own adapters. And you, as an ADFS admin, can plug it into ADFS. And now you have this additional authentication method that is available. I have a demo of one of those third parties today as well. The next feature is extranet soft lock or protection. So if you're essentially coming from the extranet, and a user essentially knows your username, and they just keep hammering the system with invalid passwords, over time, they can lock out your machine, your account in AD. They can DOS you out. So we now have protection at the edge on the web application proxy through the ADFS proxy to be able to do soft lockout, where we can say that we will essentially not allow any more authentications from that invalid account to hit AD for a small observation window and make sure that the AD account is not locked out and the user can still access the resources from the internet whilst making sure that there's no more spam attempts from the extranet where they just keep hammering the AD. We have self-service change password, so users who never come back into corporate can now change the password from the extranet, from workplace joined devices. We have a password expiry notification, so if your password's about to expire, users get notification of that. And then you also have long-lived persistent single sign-on from workplace joined devices, which means if you close your browser, come back after, like you shut down your machine, come back after a while, you still have single sign-on for a duration that's determined by your administrator, so it's admin configurable. For modern apps, we delivered OAuth 2.0 support. Essentially, what we have is public clients, I'm sorry, this is a mistake here, public clients authorization code grant flow with refresh tokens. So you can essentially create applications that use rich backend services and essentially can authorize themselves using OAuth 2 against Active Directory. It's fully compatible with the AD authentication library, so you write the same kind of app against Azure AD or against ADFS, same API signatures, just works. You get longer-lived refresh tokens, again, for workplace joined devices, so it means you can write apps where users don't need to keep re-authenticating on a known trusted device for a longer period of time. Again, admin configurable, so if you choose not to allow that, you can choose to control that on your ADFS server as well. We now support JSON web tokens. The older tokens, the other format that we support is SAML tokens, a lot harder to work with. You have to write a lot of parsing code, pull out claims or attributes from that. JSON web tokens are extremely easy to use. They're just basically JSON objects and much easier to use in language of your choice. You can also require MFA using protocols. So if you're using WSFed, SAML, you can essentially request for a particular application that ADFS performs MFA. On the deployment front, one of the biggest changes we did was ADFS is no longer built on IIS, which means you can now potentially also install it on your domain controller if you want to shrink the number of machines you have to manage. As a result of that, it's also possible for you to do a lot of customizations using PowerShell. You don't really need to understand CSS or be an advanced web developer in order to be able to do customizations. It's all possible with PowerShell. On the deployment front, we also fully integrated it with Server Manager, so when you add the role, all of the config steps required for you to in order to set up ADFS is all done in line through the wizard, and you really can set it up even with SQL Server through the UI with a consistent experience. Of course, we added prerequisite checks as well, and we added support for something called GMSA, which is a group managed service account, and gives you a very easy way to manage a service across many nodes, especially in terms of changing the password of the service account without any downtime and so on. It just gets taken care of automatically. To support geo-distributed environments, we now have SQL merge replication of the config database, which means that all of your configuration can be replicated across, let's say, two sites, and make sure that the ADFS server basically hits the database or the SQL database that's closest to its site and ensures that you have better performance. You also have better availability in case that data center goes down. For the sign-in experience, since we moved off of IIS, it gave us a good opportunity to focus on making that more customizable. And what we did there was we improved the default sign-in pages. We tried to make it very consistent with Azure AD. And we went with this responsive mobile-friendly design. So if you're on an iPad or if you're on a mobile phone, the login page experience will zoom or shrink in order to basically manage the available viewport. And it'll do that in a more or less seamless manner. So if you're on a smaller device, the images go away and you just get your login boxes. Users now have a choice when there's multiple authentication methods that the admin has enabled, like you have cert-based auth or forms-based auth. Users can choose what authentication methods are available, what they want to use. And then when we also have devices like, let's say, iPads or Android devices that are not capable of integrated Windows auth, the system automatically falls back to forms authentication. So if you come in with a device that's not capable of Windows integrated auth from the internet, ADFS will automatically fall back and offer forms-based login experience so that those users are not broken on their devices. They can fall back to forms-based authentication. All of our customization is now PowerShell based, which means that you can essentially customize things like the image, the logo, any help desk links, anything that you really want to do on the login page using PowerShell commandlets. No more CSS. You also get a customized per application, per RP access denied message, which is what you saw a few slides ago. And you also get one-click error reporting for users. So if they essentially encounter an error, they can essentially call your help desk, or you can put a link to your help desk and send information about the error, including an activity ID, which an admin can then use to trace what went wrong. All of that is just printed on your authentication page. For home realm discovery, what we did was we made it easier to do auto-discovery based on your organizational suffix. And so rather than showing a whole list of identity providers, based on the user's organizational suffix, we can show them exactly the right one which is available. And that makes it a much easier experience on the login page rather than having a huge drop-down of identity providers. We also have the ability by which an admin can configure a particular application to be bound to only one identity provider. So for instance, if you have a vendor application which should really only be used by vendors or your third-party partners, you can show only that option to authenticate on the login page. Makes it much easier for end users when they choose that application. You also have the ability to bypass HRD or home realm discovery for any intranet access. So makes it much easier for users. They don't get that option on the intranet. And finally, the last big category that we will focus on heavily in this session from this point onwards is conditional access control. So what we did to start off with was make it admin configurable in order to be able to specify which auth methods, authentication methods, are used on your ADFS server. So this is network location specific, where you have a different set of methods for users coming from the intranet and a different set of methods from the extranet. So if you're very security conscious, you don't want username password-based authentication from the extranet, you can actually fall back to using smart card or cert-based auth from the extranet and completely block out forms-based auth. You get that level of control with this. We have this notion of a global MFA trigger, and a way to think about it is essentially you have the ability to create rules or policies globally that trigger MFA. So based on those conditions, you can trigger MFA. An example would be anybody coming from the extranet must perform 2FA. So this is applicable regardless of what resource the user is trying to access. You've also seen that we have integrated support for third-party MFA providers. I'm going to walk through each of these in details with demos a little later in the session. This is just a high-level overview. The third thing that I wanted to talk about here on this slide is this notion of global SSO revocation. So if you've had a breach incident, you can configure ADFS to revoke all SSO that was issued in the past, beyond that point in time, before that point in time. And so that means that you have a very quick single kind of knob by which you can make sure that all previously issued single sign-on is revoked and users must re-authenticate themselves. Useful for a breach event, essentially. So with that, let's actually get a little more into detail in terms of how conditional access control works. And before doing that, I wanted to walk through a few small concepts on which this notion is, of conditional access control is built on. So the first one is this notion of workplace join, which really is the foundation of our BYOD story, because that's how a device gets its identity. That's how ADFS is able to authenticate a device. So to start off with, a user on their Windows device, iOS device, or Android device is going to try and register their device. The first step that the client does is to locate DRS. Right? When it finds the device registration service, essentially the first step they need to do is to authenticate the user, where now the user enters their username password. You can configure it to require MFA if required, and the user is really authenticating themselves and saying, it's really me who's trying to register this device. All of this authentication, by the way, happens over OAuth. It's a modern protocol that we use. The next step now is to register the device. And here what the DRS does is it creates a device object in the directory, and it binds the user and the device, and it says that, yes, this device was registered by this user, and that representation is now stored or persisted in the directory. So you have a new type of device object in the directory where all of this information is stored. As a result of that, what the DRS does also is it installs a device certificate on that client. This device certificate is then used every time the device authenticates itself in order to prove the identity of that device. So that's kind of how the whole notion of workplace joined works at a really high level. It's integrated into your Windows experience. With iOS, you have a one-click experience. With Android, we're working with Samsung and with Google, essentially, to make sure that it's available as an account experience in there. So the benefits of workplace join is if you're essentially coming in from an unknown device, ADFS has the ability to authenticate only the user. And that gives you some sort of authentication, gives you a fairly decent level of confidence, but not a whole lot, because it's just a single-factor authentication. Whereas if you're coming in from a workplace join device, we can seamlessly authenticate the device under the covers as well. And so now you get two factors of authentication, where the user's authenticated, and we've also seamlessly authenticated their device under the covers. As a result of that, you can now make sure that you have this notion of compound identity, where you have stronger authentication semantics. It's also seamless for the end user because it's done by the client TLS mechanism, so the underlying transport or the network stack takes care of it without the user really seeing any prompts or needing to do any interaction in any way. Now, really, this is a little more detail for those of you inclined towards details, is that as part of the client TLS handshake itself, the ADFS server is going to challenge the device and say, hey, prove to me that you actually are in possession of a device certificate. And then the device essentially coughs up that cert. ADFS is able to go and validate that the cert was actually issued by it and the device was actually issued or registered by that user, and as a result of which, we can essentially authenticate the device. And the important thing to note here is it's seamless. It's handled by the underlying stack because client TLS is a seamless mechanism. It's taken care of by the network stack. So now we actually do have a bunch of device categories. We have the unknown device. A way to think about it is that the organization has no control. And so from an end user perspective, if you've really locked things down, they really have no access to that, to resources from that device. Workplace joined devices sort of sit in the middle, somewhere between unknown devices and domain joined devices, and they give you some partial control as an organization. Remember, it's still a device that the end user brought in, and so you really do not have a whole bunch of policies or settings that you can enforce on that device. But you can enforce something basic, like require a PIN or a passcode. If you use something like Intune, you can add a few more policies on that device, make sure that it is properly managed, and so on. The other end of the spectrum, you have domain joined machines, which we have been using for decades, kind of still has its same value propositions associated with it. So this is really the continuum of devices that are associated with your directory, just a way to think about it. Now, what we're also doing is taking the device registration capabilities and offering it up in the cloud through something called Azure Device Registration Service. Exactly the same kind of workflows, the same experiences for the end user. The benefit for you as an IT person is that you don't really need to manage the service on-prem. You have it running up in the cloud, much easier when you work with Office 365 and so on. And it's really recommended for customers who have hybrid deployments. You can set up dir sync or directory sync to synchronize device objects back to the on-premises directory. That's something that we've added recently. Dir sync can pull down device objects as well. And that means that your on-premises ADFS server can also authenticate users who've registered their devices using the cloud DRS. So we've made sure that you can sync device objects back and forth using dir sync. The Azure DRS is right now in private preview. We expect it soon to be available for public preview as well and for consumption soon after. Now, with this workplace join device, you essentially have this ability to use known devices in your risk mitigation strategy. So as an IT admin, you can say, allow only known devices to access this particular application. And what you're really thinking of as an IT admin is that a known device includes a workplace join device and a domain join device. And so any user who's actually accessing that resource from a known device is allowed through, right? And a domain join computer is typically an organizationally owned computer versus a workplace joined device, which is really a user-owned or a BYO device. The second concept is network location awareness in ADFS. Now, since requests from the extranet come from the web application proxy, ADFS is intimately aware of where the request is coming from, so it can differentiate between an extranet and an intranet access. So you can create different rules based on whether the request came from the intranet versus the extranet, and you now have this new claim that is available inside the ADFS pipeline, also available for issuance, called the inside corporate network claim. It's a Boolean claim. You can use that claim to figure out whether users are coming from the intranet or the extranet. Really simple to set that up. OK, with that, we're just going to start diving deeper into the ADFS access control pipeline and sort of look at how ADFS access control works. From a really high-level perspective, you have authentication, and then you have authorization. First, you validate who's trying to access the resource, and then you figure out whether to allow them access to that resource or not. So that's the difference, authentication and authorization. Within authentication, you've always had primary authentication, which is the ability to validate a user's identity using Windows Integrated Auth, Forms-based Auth, or Certificate-based Auth. You now have the ability to also authenticate using MFA, or additional authentication, and then device authentication also slots in seamlessly. So at the end of this, you can potentially have a three-factor kind of authentication here, where you have primary auth of the user, you have device auth that happens seamlessly, and then you can have additional authentication configured using an MFA provider. And that really gives you multiple factors of auth. Now, conceptually, ADFS authentication looks like a pipeline where you have requests over OAuth, WSFed, and SAML coming in. You have a bunch of processing that happens, and then finally, access tokens are either, you know, access is either given, a token is issued, or you get an access denied. It's a little more complicated when you go in a little more, zoom in a little bit. But really, this is how it looks at a high level, where you have protocol requests coming in over WSFed, SAML, and OAuth. You have a stage called primary and device authentication, and then the ADFS system figures out, should I trigger MFA for this request, yes or no? And then based on that, additional authentication happens, and then finally you have access control, which is issuance auth Z rules, which figures out whether to issue a token or not. So we're going to now go and look into primary and device authentication, and then I'll give you a quick demo of how authentication policies are configured and how that looks. Right? So essentially, the way this works is that you have this notion of an authentication policy, which is that you as an admin can configure from the intranet versus the extranet what auth methods are available to end users. So if you actually look at this, for my extranet access, I've got forms-based authentication enabled. And for intranet, I have both forms and Windows Integrated Auth enabled, which means when users actually come and try to authenticate against ADFS, they'll get a choice from amongst these enabled authentication methods. You'll also notice that I've turned on device authentication, so I get seamless second factor auth. The other important thing to note here is that we have automatic fallback. So if you've enabled Windows Integrated Auth and someone comes in from an iOS or an Android device that cannot perform Windows Integrated Auth, ADFS will automatically fall back to forms-based auth, even if it is not enabled in policy. Very easy to set using PowerShell. You have get set ADFS authentication policy. You can configure which auth methods are available and so on. Now, really, this is how primary authentication works. First, we check to see if there is a requested authentication method from the request on the wire. So if some developer has essentially requested us to use a specific auth method using either SAML or WSFed, that's the first thing we take into account. Right? If that is the method that is enabled, we go ahead and authenticate the user with that method. The second thing to look at is the network location of that access, whether it's coming from the extranet versus the intranet. If it's coming from the extranet, we look at what available methods are there in the extranet authentication policy, and those are the methods that are actually available to the end user to authenticate themselves. If you look at the intranet, if the request came in from the intranet, you have the similar experience where it looks at the authentication methods enabled for the intranet, and that's finally how the end user is authenticated. Now, the important thing to note here is it's very network location dependent. So as an IT admin, you have control over what methods are offered to the user. Additionally, it also takes into account wire requests. Very, very easily configurable using PowerShell, and I'll quickly give you a demo of that as well. So this is my ADFS server. I'm going to zoom in a little bit, and you'll notice that these are my primary authentication settings. I have auth methods for extranet versus intranet, and I'm going to actually go and show you how to configure those. Really simple, you have a property page here on which you can select specific auth methods for extranet, specific auth methods for intranet. You'll notice that I have Windows authentication turned on for the intranet here, which is the default when you install ADFS. I have forms-based authentication turned on from the extranet. You'll find that a lot of our really security-conscious customers who don't want passwords to be used from the extranet would turn off forms auth from the extranet, and it only enables certificate-based authentication. So that's, it really gives you that level of control if you want that. The other thing I wanted to show you quickly was this notion of multi-factor authentication, right? So you have the ability to essentially configure additional authentication methods. The ones I showed you previously were the primary auth methods. These are additional auth methods. So what method should be used for MFA? The one that's built into ADFS is certificate or smart card-based auth. That's built into the system. You don't need to install any pluggable adapter, nothing. On this system, I actually have two other adapters that are installed. I have Login People, which is a third-party adapter. I'll be showing you a demo of that in a while. And the second one that I actually have installed is the Windows Azure MFA provider, which really uses Windows Azure as the second factor provider, a service running up in Azure. So here again, you have choice over which auth methods are available to the end user. If you've selected multiple from this list, the end user essentially gets a choice. When they authenticate on the login page, they get a choice. I'll show you that in a demo in a bit. So let's quickly take a look at what it looks like when an end user essentially authenticates. So here I'm going to my website, which is essentially a web-based app, and it's going to dump claims. It's going to show me what claims are available in my token. You'll notice that the app has essentially redirected me to my ADFS server, and this is the login page. You have the ability to customize this page. In this instance, you essentially have an image to the left, which essentially shows you something about the organization. It could be a photograph or an image that users associate with the organization. You have branding for your org, which again can be configured using PowerShell. We have this set up for Contoso. And then the actual text in there, which says sign in with your organizational account, can also be modified. Now, down here where you see copyright Microsoft, you have the ability to add multiple links there. So if you want to link to your help desk, you want to link to the password change page, a bunch of those links can easily be added using PowerShell. So this is a very vanilla page. I've only done some very basic customization on it. I'm going to go ahead and enter my credentials here. So this is a very simple app. All it does is once it gets an access token from ADFS, it dumps the contents of that token. Essentially, you see a whole bunch of claims about the user, their UPN, their group memberships, what is the SID, what is their Windows account name, and so on. All of this can be used by an application, consumed by an application to figure out whether to allow access or how to customize display for a particular user and so on. But the section I really wanted to take your attention to here is the authentication section. So we have actually a new claim called authn methods references, which is used to convey what authentication method was used to authenticate the user. You'll remember in this example, I did no MFA. I simply authenticated using my username password. And so therefore, I have only one auth method here, which is the password protected transport, which is essentially forms-based auth. As we scale up this demo, as we add MFA to the mix, you'll notice that more authentication methods are available here. And this is really how you as an admin can create rules. You can, on the relying party side, you can essentially inspect what auth methods were used by the user and so on. So with that said, the other thing I wanted to show you was this inside corporate network claim. You'll notice that in this example, we came from the extranet. ADFS has detected that the request came from the extranet, and the inside corporate network claim is set to false. This really offers you a very simple way to distinguish between an intranet access and an extranet access, and you can create custom rules based on that. Right? With that, we're going to quickly switch back to our PPT and walk through some of the rest of the details here. The next big feature is this notion of extranet soft lockout protection. Right, so you really do not want people from the extranet to be able to enter random credentials, which is just your username and some random password, and then over time DOS out or lock out your AD account. That's much more painful for end users, locks them out from the intranet as well, and then you have costs associated with, you know, help desk costs associated with unsetting it or resetting that account. What we have in ADFS is this notion of extranet soft lockout, where as an admin, you can configure a lockout threshold and an observation window. Think of a threshold as a number of incorrect authentication attempts. So if a user authenticates incorrectly, let's say 3 or 4 times, you can force it into this soft lockout kind of mode. And then for a longer period of time, which is the observation window, again, something which you control as an admin, that user is prevented from authenticating from the extranet, which means that the AD bad password count is not being incremented, and the user account is not being locked in Active Directory. So this is a soft lockout, which is done from the edge and makes sure that as people just, you know, randomly hit your extranet sites and try to do brute force attacks, you have this ability to sort of choke it or block it at the extranet itself. Very easy to configure. Again, it's PowerShell based. You can create an extranet observation window with a time span that says 30 minutes, enable extranet lockout, and then set a lockout threshold as well, which says how many attempts must a user or invalid attempts must a user be allowed. So we'll skip through the demo part because we just did that. The next stage in the pipeline after authenticating a user, after device authentication happens seamlessly, is this notion of MFA. Should the system prompt the user for MFA or not? And that really is up to you as an IT admin based on the kind of sensitivity of the app, the kind of conditions you can trigger whether to do MFA or not. In that stage, we essentially have two levels at which MFA triggers can be configured. You have a global MFA trigger, which means regardless of what application the user is trying to access, they're always prompted to do MFA. An example of that would be if you have an exec or if you have a user who belongs to a sensitive group and they're trying to access from the extranet, you want to force them to always use MFA. That's an example of a global trigger. It works regardless of the kind of application that you're trying to protect. Again, it's a very powerful tool, so use it carefully because it means that for every single request, regardless of the type of application, the user is going to be forced to do MFA. Really good, typically, for extranet protection. The second kind of policy we have is the per-resource policy, which means on a specific resource itself, you can configure an MFA policy that says, this is a sensitive resource, and therefore anybody who accesses from the extranet must do MFA. Or anybody who belongs to a specific group must do MFA. Or somebody who belongs to a group as well as is coming from the extranet. So you really get my point. You can do a combination of conditions, and based on that, you can configure an MFA trigger. The way ADFS works is that it's essentially a logical OR. If any of these conditions require us to do MFA, the user is going to be prompted to do MFA. So if you as an IT admin have a global setting that's been configured that requires MFA, or a specific app has a setting, or a wire request came in that said, please do MFA for this request, ADFS is going to trigger MFA, and the user is going to be required to perform MFA at that point in time. It's very simple to write a claim rule that triggers MFA. In a sense, what you're doing is you're injecting a claim into the ADFS pipeline called the authentication method claim, and you're setting it to a value of multiple authent, which says, please do MFA. Now, what we did in the ADFS in the UI is we picked a couple of scenarios that are the most frequently used, and we made those UI single checkbox kind of experiences. And for anything that's more complicated, where you want conditions, you want combinations of conditions, you can do that using claim rules. I'm going to give you examples of some of that in a bit. Now, for the developers in the audience, essentially, there is a request that we've seen a lot, which is, how do I trigger MFA using wire protocols? If I'm writing an app that requires MFA, how do I go about doing that? And these are two examples. The first one is with the SAML protocol. You have this ability to request MFA by using the requested authn context element and then setting that to this value of multiple authn. That really triggers ADFS to perform MFA for that request. With the WS Fed protocol, you essentially have a query parameter, which is the WAuth parameter. You set that to the same value, and it will trigger MFA for that request. So it's a consistent mechanism that sort of works across these two different protocols, and it allows application developers to request MFA when they're doing something sensitive within their application, so like a step-up auth kind of mechanism. It's also very useful for cloud resources, which are secured by Azure AD, because Azure AD can now instruct your on-premises ADFS server to perform MFA for a sensitive app. So for instance, if you're accessing a SharePoint portal secured by Azure AD, and that's been configured to require MFA, Azure AD is going to instruct your on-premises ADFS server to perform MFA for that request, regardless of whether it's configured in the policy or not. So that's the ability with the wire protocols. You get that ability to configure MFA for your request. Triggering MFA in policy is extremely simple. I'm going to show you this in a bit, but there is a UI experience where you can add a set of groups for which, or groups or users for which MFA must be performed, You can specify whether it should be performed for unregistered devices or unknown devices. You can specify whether it should be performed for extranet versus intranet, and so on. Additionally, in the bottom of that wireframe, you can see that you can also select what auth methods are available in order to perform MFA. Any complicated triggers that you want to create are possible using PowerShell, where you can create an MFA claim rule that has combinations of conditions, and you can apply those combinations and make sure that MFA is configured. Here's a list of claims that are available. I'm not going to go through each and every one of them. A few of them are really useful. Essentially, your group memberships, the network location from which the request is coming in, whether the device is authenticated. You'll notice there's a bunch of device information about the device itself, the kind of OS version, the identifier for the device, whether the user is the same person who actually registered that device, and so on. And you can use all of these claims in order to trigger MFA. So if there's a type of OS version that you do not trust, or if there's a type of device that you want to specifically trigger MFA for, you have those capabilities in the system as well. There's a few other claims for the request-related information. What we did is we got a lot of feedback about using IP addresses and IP ranges in order to be able to trigger additional authentication. And so now we've exposed all of those as claims in the system. So you can see where the request originated from. And then based on that, you can do a bunch of MFA triggers. You also have the inside corporate network Boolean claim that can be used in order to trigger MFA based on whether it came from the proxy or not, right? So I'm going to quickly jump to a demo and show you how some of this looks in the UI itself. So we'll clear out our SSO state here and switch back to the ADFS console. So you'll notice that you have these MFA settings here. You have the ability to add groups or users. You have the ability to specify MFA for unregistered or non-workplace joined devices. And you also have a choice between extranet and intranet. So as an example, what I'm going to do actually is go to one of my apps here, which is the Simple Claims app, which you just saw. And we're going to set this up to require MFA from the extranet. And just so all of you can see, what I've done is essentially set extranet for MFA, right? Now, on this system, the kind of auth methods that are available for me in order to perform MFA can be seen here. You'll notice that I have both login people and I have Windows Azure MFA that's been configured. So let's quickly go back to our app and see if this has had any change or any impact on my experience when I get to the app. All right, so I get my primary authentication page. And the SGS is thinking for a bit. Okay, incorrect password. Ah, wrong domain. Okay, so here what's happened is you've performed primary authentication, and the system has figured out that there was a per application setting that required MFA. So you'll notice quickly that the form has changed, and you now have this choice between authentication methods. This is because two of them were actually enabled in policy. If you have just one auth method, the system's going to jump directly into that. So here the end user gets a choice between multi-factor authentication and login people authentication. So I'm going to select multi-factor authentication. And when I hit continue, it should essentially connect me to my phone. It should make a phone call here. So you'll notice I get a phone call, and I have the option to enter hash in order to essentially authenticate myself. At this point in time, I'm authenticated, and I'm allowed access to this application. What I want to call your attention to here is that the auth claims that are issued in the token have now changed. You have your initial password-protected transport, which essentially means you did primary authentication. But in addition, you now have this auth method claim that says this user performed MFA using phone confirmation. That means they got a phone call, and they confirmed it was indeed themselves. right? And you also now have the special value called multiple auth n, which is the third on that list there. And that tells the developer of that application that, yes, indeed, MFA was performed for this request. So that's the difference here. This is really the way by which we can convey to a third party or to a relying party that's actually building an application that MFA was performed for this request and a specific authentication method was used in order to perform MFA. Now, we'll switch back quickly, and I'll show you some of the PowerShell experience related to this. So if you want to essentially see the global authentication policy on your ADFS server, you just saw the UI experience around that. I'm now going to essentially issue what's the get ADFS authentication policy commandlet, and you'll see exactly the same kind of information here, which is login people, MFA provider has been installed, Windows authentication has been turned on for primary internet authentication, and for external authentication, I have forms-based auth that's enabled, right? Now, you can essentially get more information about each of these providers. In this case, I'm getting a bunch of information about my additional authentication provider, so let me just try to do that. And let's select the Windows Azure multi-factor authentication provider, and let's see some of the settings for that. So you'll notice that each authentication provider that's registered with the system will advertise to the ADFS system what kind of auth methods it supports. Here, PhoneFactor actually supports a whole bunch of them. It supports phone call-based confirmation. It supports a voice or a biometric kind of operation. It has an SMS-based reply. And it also has an app on which you can get an authenticator app kind of experience. You get a one-time code. You enter that into the system, and it basically just lets you through. One of the benefits of the kind of way in which we architected this was that third parties have access to that authentication real estate where they can paint their own UI elements, and if they need to do to and fro kind of interactions, they have the ability to do that in order to collect information from the user. So for instance, if you want to do authentication based on questions, you have the ability to pose a question to the user, like what is your mother's maiden name and so on, collect an answer and do all of that inline through the authentication flow itself without having to break out into another system. So that's kind of the way we architected MFA in ADFS. Now, with this, essentially, what happens is that let's also take a look at the authentication methods in some more detail, and you'll find that these are the authentication methods that the Windows Azure MFA provider supports. Right? Let's now quickly change gears and look at how to configure an MFA trigger rule. You looked at the very basic experience in the UI, which is just a checkbox experience. Now I'm going to create a slightly more complicated rule and show you how to configure that in this demo here. So first, we get the ADFS relying party trust for our application. This is called URN ADFS Who Am I. So I'm going to get some information about that using the get ADFS relying party trust commandlet. I'm going to check to see if there is any additional authentication rule that's been configured for it. And you'll notice that the rule that we configured from the UI, which is if any request comes from outside the corporate network or from the extranet, require MFA. That rule's now configured for this relying party. What we're going to do now is change the rule a little bit and say if the request, if the user belongs to a particular group, SID, or belongs to a particular group, then trigger MFA, right? So this is another slightly different experience, and you'll notice that I've created a claim rule string that says if the user belongs to a particular group, then issue an MFA claim. Very simple to apply this to the relying party trust. All I have to say is set ADFS relying party trust and set the additional authentication rules setting, and that basically applies it. So let's check to see if that got applied. And you'll notice that my relying party trust MFA trigger rule was applied. So this gives you a very simple way by which you can create a claim rule that has a combination of conditions, and you can use the logical AND or operator to create more complicated kind of conditions, and you can apply that as an MFA trigger. The UI still gives you the basic two or three rules that you need, but if you want to go a little more fancy, if you want a more complicated condition, you have the power of the claims-based engine that ADFS is built on, and then you can create those rules based on that. So we're just going to quickly clear out the rule that we essentially configured and switch back out from this back to the deck for a bit. I have a couple of rules here, a couple of samples. This is a sample that triggers MFA based on group membership. You'll notice that we look for a specific group SID that the user belongs to, and then issue the authentication method claim into the pipeline, and that triggers MFA. Another sample to trigger MFA from the extranet. So I'm looking at the inside corporate network Boolean claim. If that's set to false, then I trigger additional authentication. A third rule here is essentially trigger MFA when users access from a non-workplace joined device. You'll notice here that I look for the is-registered user Boolean claim. If that is set to false, I then trigger MFA using the same mechanism, right? To make it a little more interesting, what you can actually do is take combinations of each of these and use a logical ampersand operator, and I essentially create a more complicated rule. So the next question essentially is, what happens if I've created an MFA rule and I have some active protocols like WS Trust or applications that use active protocols that are essentially trying to access that app? So what happens in that case is that it actually blocks access from those active protocols. And you'd really see this start to impact things like Link and Outlook with Office 365 that actually use these active protocols. And you'll see this error that's in the blue box there. The solution for that is to essentially exclude requests that were received over these active protocols. And the sample here essentially does just that. What it does is essentially looks at the endpoint on ADFS server on which the request was received. In this case, either the ADFS LS or the OAuth 2 endpoints are what's really used for passive or browser-based requests. And anything that was received from a different endpoint, you can actually exclude that. That gives you a way by which your Link and your Outlook keeps working, even though you've configured an MFA rule, right? Now let's go back to the pipeline, and then let's look at how the additional authentication phase itself works. And you've seen that you can essentially enable additional authentication using the UI, and you can select what additional authentication methods are available. You saw through PowerShell how you can essentially set your global authentication policy and enable specific methods. When end users get multiple authentication methods, they essentially get a choice. They can select which ones they want. So what we did was we integrated with Azure MFA, which really runs as a service in the cloud, and it offers many convenient MFA methods. It also synchronizes your user information with AD so that your phone numbers from AD are picked up. You don't need to provision that separately and so on. And it also adds support for applications secured by ADFS through the plugin adapter. We took it one step further and we integrated with some third parties as well. Now, we recently announced in a press, in a press article that we had essentially partnered with SafeNet in order to come up with a third party or with a SafeNet authentication provider. It has support for hardware or software-based OTP, SMS, and GridShare, and it's also available as a cloud service so that the pluggable adapter that you install in ADFS talks to their cloud service and additional authentication happens. What I want to demonstrate here is a pluggable adapter from Login People. This is another third party that we've been working with, and they have this notion of a digital DNA, which you can actually provision on any of your devices, either your laptop or your desktop, or a USB thumb drive like this one I have here, or on your phone, and a bunch of other methods. And they ship an adapter that actually registers with ADFS and allows you to be able to authenticate with ADFS, perform MFA, and be able to essentially complete your MFA. So I'll give you a quick demo of the Login People setup, and let's switch back to our demo setup here. I'm going to go back quickly to the ADFS snap-in here and show you that the Login People provider is installed and it's actually enabled on my system here, right? And what we're going to do is go back to one of our applications and configure it to require MFA and check to see if it's configured. So in this case, we're going to configure it to require MFA from the extranet. And let's go back here, clear out our state, and let's retry authenticating here. Let's clear out SSO. OK. So now we're going to try authenticating to the Who Am I app again. Since I cleared out my SSO state, I re-authenticate myself. So once again, you see the choice page here. I'm going to select login people authentication here at the page. And you notice that it's prompting me to enter my device on which I've provisioned my DNA. In this case, it's a thumb drive, so I'm going to try installing that in here. And you'll notice that the UI that the adapter is actually showing you here, the connector equipment and the images, all of that is in line with the ADFS authentication page. It did not prompt something up. It's all just in line. It has the ability to do this to and fro kind of interaction. So I've put in my thumb drive, and I hit login, and now I'm authenticated to the service. And if you quickly go back to the authentication method references claim, you'll notice that there's now a knowledge-based access or a different authentication method that shows that I actually used a separate provider. In this case, the provider is using KBA as its auth method. So using this mechanism, you can essentially work with a bunch of third-party providers. You can register their providers inside the ADFS system, and you get an MFA experience that's very consistent and it's streamlined. It's within the ADFS system rather than having to go branch out into a separate experience. Right? So let's quickly jump back to our deck here, and let's move on. So what does an access token look like after MFA was performed? Here is an example of a JWT token, which is a very concise token format. It's a JSON object, and you'll notice that the auth method references claim I showed you has been abbreviated to the AMR claim, and here it'll tell you what auth methods were used in order to authenticate the user. Additionally, you have a whole bunch of other claims that you as an admin can configure, and those are sent out to the relying party or sent out to the application, and those are available for the app to consume. The same thing in a SAML token looks like this, where you have essentially an attribute statement. Within the attribute statement, you have an attribute name with auth and methods references, and then that has a value, a set of values for all the auth methods used to authenticate the user. Okay, so now let's actually go back and look at access control, actually determining whether the user should be allowed access or not. So far, we looked at primary authentication for the user. We looked at how to trigger MFA. We looked at what the experience was like when they performed MFA. Now let's figure out how you can essentially gate access to that application, how you can configure conditional access control. Right? So really, the way we've built this is that you can do this based on many pivots. You can look at the user's identity, the memberships of the groups that they belong to, the network location from which the request came in. You can look at the type of device, whether it's workplace joined or not. You can look at the authentication that the user performed, whether they did MFA or not. And then you can take an aspect, which is the sensitivity of the resource. And based on all of this, you can figure out, hey, do I want to allow access or not? So it's a multi-factor kind of access control decision that you get to make based on a whole bunch of conditions, claims that are available for you in the ADFS pipeline. It's extremely flexible and expressive in terms of you're able to actually create authorization rules that have combinations of conditions. You can look for specific values. Since it's built on the ADFS claims engine, you have access to regular expressions as well for strings, and you can look at specific things when you're trying to make these access control decisions. There's a UI or a wizard experience for extremely common kind of scenarios, which is permit access to all users, permit access to users based on a group, permit access to users based on the value of a specific claim like inside corporate network or whether they performed MFA and so on. But when you want to create combinations of conditions, you have access to these claim rules which have conditions, combinations, and so on, and you can create pretty sophisticated kind of conditions based on that. Now, the third pivot really, and the most important pivot, is a custom access denied message. It's not enough to just deny access. It would be really good if you can tell the user why they were denied access and how they go about remediating that. And that has the benefit of not forcing a bunch of help desk calls on the IT admin. It makes it easier for users to resolve situations in a self-service manner. And what we did in ADFS to enable this was to enable this notion of a custom access denied message, which you can set on a per relying party basis using very simple PowerShell commandlets in order to create these custom, you know, access denied kind of messages. Now, I'll give you a couple of sample MFA, access control or authorization rules. Here's a very simple one which says permit access only if MFA was performed. This is exposed in the UI, but in case you want to do it through PowerShell, here's how you'd go about doing it. You'd look for the auth n methods references claim that we saw in the token, and you'd say if that has a value of multiple auth n, allow access. Here's another one, which is essentially permit access only from a workplace joined device. So this gives you protection from unknown devices, where you say, hey, if someone comes from a device that was not workplace joined, I'm going to look for this is registered user claim, and then if it's set to true, I'm going to allow access. This gives you a little more than just a registered device. This ensures that the user who registered the device is the same as the user who authenticated to access that resource. Now you can actually look at some of the power of the conditional access claim rules, where you can create combinations. Here's an example that actually combines both those conditions that says permit access from a workplace joined device if MFA was performed. So what you do is you take both of these claim conditions and you combine them, and at that point in time, you decide to allow access if the user came from a workplace joined device and if they performed MFA. Here's another sample which says permit access from the extranet only if MFA was performed. Again, you're looking at the extranet condition, you're looking at the MFA being performed condition, you combine them with an AND condition, and then you basically allow access. So let's actually quickly do a demo of that and show you how some of that works. So I'm switching here to my conditional access control rules. I'm going to clear this out so you can see what I do here. I start off with getting information about the relying party trust or the app for which I want to configure rules. I select the rules just to see what is configured, and you'll notice that the default rule that configures, that allows access to everybody, has been configured for this relying party. And now what I'm going to do is basically create an issuance authorization rule that requires MFA for extranet access. And if you look at this rule, what it essentially says is, look at the auth n methods references claim. If that has a value of multiple auth n, and if the inside corporate network claim has a value of false, then issue a permit, which means then allow access to that application, right? So it's a rule that's now built on a combination of conditions that looks for MFA being performed, and it looks for where the request came from. Once you've created this claim rule string, what we'll do is we'll go back and we'll apply it to our application. So we're applying it to our claims app, which we just looked at. And at that point in time, essentially, what we've done is we've set this issuance auth z rule. You can go back and look at it and see if it was done successfully. You'll notice that essentially on the relying party trust, this issuance auth z rule has been configured, which means now when anybody tries to access this app, they're going to be forced to perform additional authentication, and they're going to be forced to do that from the extranet as well. Let me quickly switch back to the deck. There's a couple more things I wanted to cover. Let's actually skip through this slide. This will show you how the entire ADFS pipeline works, and so if you're actually looking at this session, looking at the slide deck after, you can look through it. It really covers everything that we've talked through in the last 5 to 10 slides, right? So let's look at essentially putting it all together. Look at what your toolbox looks like now that all of these capabilities come in. What we do with ADFS, or what our emphasis has been to allow you to protect resources, which means that you now have a network location-aware primary authentication. So if you do not want passwords for extranet access, you can turn on forms-based authentication. You can only enable cert-based auth, and so users don't have to use username password from the extranet. You also have resource-specific settings. You have a setting on a per-resource basis which says, this is a sensitive resource, always require authentication. It's on the MFA tab on the per-app basis that you can essentially say, this is a payroll app, always require users to authenticate freshly for this app. You can require known devices, which is something you saw with the rule that we just configured. So you can ensure that this is a sensitive app that only users from a known device can access. You always had the ability with ADFS to require only specific users or groups to be able to access a resource. Again, a very simple concept where you can say only people belonging to payroll or HR can access a specific app, as an example. You now have the ability to require MFA on a per-app basis, which means not all apps are the same. If you have a news app or something that's low business impact, you do not have to require MFA for that. But for a sensitive app, like a payroll app or another line of business app, you can always require MFA. So the system allows you to essentially distinguish between applications based on their sensitivity. And that's another capability that allows you to protect your resources. You can also protect devices that users use in order to access resources. And how you do that is essentially if a device was marked lost, if a user reported a device lost, you can disable that device object in the directory. And what ADFS does is it actually blocks authentication on these lost or stolen devices. So as an end user, if you're out on vacation and you lose your device, you call up your IT help desk, or you use Intune and you have a self-service experience, you can essentially report your device lost or stolen, and that sets an attribute under the device object in the directory, marking it as disabled. From that point onwards, ADFS blocks authentication on from that device, essentially protects access to your resources, protects access to sensitive resources. If you use Intune, you have the ability to do a conditional remote wipe, where you can essentially wipe only the corporate data from that device. And that gives you the ability to protect against the damage that a lost device can wreak on your organization. ADFS also has this capability of automatic SSO invalidation, which means if you have somebody who signed into an application from their device and then the device was lost, all of that SSO state can be wiped out. So when that device comes back to ADFS to access another resource, it's going to recognize that the device was reported lost, and it's going to wipe out the state from that device, the SSO state from that device. Now the user has to re-authenticate themselves, and it means that someone cannot use your previously authenticated session in order to get to other resources secured by ADFS. So that allows you to sort of protect both your users and your resources. You have this configurable SSO invalidation threshold, so if you have a breach incident in your organization, you can say all SSO that was issued prior to now must be revoked, which means all users are forced to re-authenticate, and your previous SSO sessions across all users are now invalidated. They have to come back and re-authenticate. Allows you to essentially protect against these loss or breach kind of incidents. The last thing I wanted to talk about on this slide was you can actually require MFA for Workplace Join itself, because Workplace Join itself is a relying party of ADFS, so everything that I talked to you about here can apply to that as well. So you can configure a workplace, you can configure an MFA trigger for Workplace Join, you can configure a special issuance authorization rule that says only users belonging to, let's say, my engineering group can join their devices to the workplace. All of that access control capability is available even for your Workplace Join itself. Additionally, Workplace Join has its own set of quotas where you can say a specific user can join only n number of devices, let's say 4 or 5 devices, and so on. So really what we've tried to do is build a set of capabilities that allows you to protect your devices and ensure that when devices are lost or stolen, that your resources continue to stay protected. You have a way to invalidate SSO and state. Just one quick note that the SSO invalidation also applies to OAuth refresh tokens. So if you have any long-lived artifact, think of it as a very consistent way by which all of those are revoked. So if you have apps that use OAuth and get longer-lived refresh tokens, those are wiped out as well. The last slide for today essentially is that you can also protect users, where you have this ability to do extranet soft lockout, where you saw this earlier as well. If a user essentially, if somebody tries to DOS out a user account using invalid passwords, you have this ability to lock them out for a period of time without locking out the account in AD itself. So you have the ability to choke that on the extranet while allowing the user to continue to access their account from the intranet. Gives you some protection against malicious attempts to lock out users. The second capability is that you can require MFA for specific users or groups. So if someone belongs to a group of executives or really sensitive or users who handle sensitive data, you can make sure that they're always required to do MFA when they access resources, right? So with that, I'm pretty much at the end of my session for today. There's a couple of related content here. You can find me at the Access and Information Protection booth. There's a couple of colleagues from the ADFS team. We have a few folks from the Azure AD team as well. We're very happy to take your questions. I can hang out here after the session as well if you have any questions. So you have your typical set of resources. We're building our ADFS documentation. It's all available on the web. There's a set of deployment guides, a set of configuration steps that'll help you to set up and configure ADFS on Server 2012 R2. And please complete an evaluation of this session to win these things, essentially. All right? That's all I had for today. Thank you so much.